member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th of May, Anno Domini 2011, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to use, things to choose, and nothing to lose. Take off your shoes. We've all heard of script kiddies, people who are not bright enough to create their own viruses, but are just bright enough to use something someone else has written. Those used to be called scripts when they were simple, but are now called crimeware kits. They have become a ubiquitous part of the malware seen in the last few years, but they have mainly been confined to the Windows platform. Now reports are surfacing that the first such kit targeting Mac's Apple OS X operating system has appeared. The kit is being compared to the Zeus kit, which has been one of the more popular and pervasive crimeware kits for several years now. A report by CSIS, a Danish security firm, said that the OS X kit uses a template that's quite similar to the Zeus construction and has the ability to steal forms from Firefox. The kit is being sold under the name Wayland Yutani BOT, and it is the first of its kind to hit the Mac OS platform. Apparently, a dedicated iPad, and Linux release are under preparation as well. The Wayland Yutani bot supports web injections and form grabbing in Firefox. However, both Chrome and Safari will soon follow. The WebInjects templates are identical to the ones used in Zeus and SpyEye. Malware authors and professional attack crews have steered clear of the OS X platform for the most part for a variety of reasons. One of the main things holding up the development of the Mac-specific attack tools, experts say, is the small market share Apple has, particularly in the enterprise. However, that is gradually changing and the attackers are beginning to follow. In addition to the new crimeware kit, a Mac-specific scareware attack also popped up on Monday, targeting users who searched for some popular terms on Google. The Mac Defender scareware is appearing in search results for images of Osama bin Laden, as well as in other places. In its current incarnation, Mac Defender shows up in the installed applications kit, so it can be uninstalled. If you have accidentally installed this, go ahead and uninstall it. Relying on an uninstall option is not a good long-term protection strategy, however. OS X users should disable open safe files after downloading, and also invest in a reasonable anti-malware suit. So our question to you at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, the poll of the week, crimeware kit emerges for Mac OS X. The choices are, I refuse to believe it, I'm already protected, I'll check out the Security Tango's Mac Arena, and I could not conceivably care less, I don't own a Mac. It should come as no shock to you, our listeners, that 69% of you could not conceivably care less. What heartens me is that 17% of you say they'll check out the Security Tango's Mac Arena. Once you're done with that, of course, you'll have more to say, so please look at the little yellow box underneath the poll, click on Give Us Your Opinion, and it will take you to a place where you can put in your opinion. Steve, you had something to say?
Ding, yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting coincidence that the first fake anti-malware program was starting to get widespread distribution along with the crimeware kit itself. Maybe not so much of a coincidence.
And yes, everybody's going to say, oh, it's fake malware, you just don't have to click on it. Let's not focus on that, ladies and gentlemen. The reality is there's an actual crimeware kit out for Mac OS X. It means you are now as vulnerable as Windows people. If you own an iPad, you're as vulnerable as Windows people. If you own Linux, you're as vulnerable as Windows people. So it's time now to stop pretending you are invulnerable. So our question to you, how are you Mac people feeling about your invulnerable OS? And let's talk about the Linux people as well. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We have a lot of people who've already been, I talked about this somewhere else the other day, I was talking about this during the week, and people were berating me, both Mac people and Linux people, about how their operating systems are inviolate and cannot be harmed and blah, 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 blah. And I, you know what? If you want to get caught, go get caught. Stick your head in the sand.
Yeah, really.
Knock yourself out. I simply don't care.
How good are you at playing Russian roulette?
That's exactly right.
And that's the bottom line.
The people who argue that their operating system can't be hacked seriously don't know anything about operating systems or computers or anything.
Well, that just, you know, gives them that much more, ambition to create something to prove them wrong by these folks that love to do this.
Oh, it's the complacent so smug. People that they love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the click-happy people.
Right. I better click on this.
Yeah.
I was talking about that last night in Second Life, too. Some people don't get the hang of single-click versus double-click, and they're always double-clicking things. So you double-click a link on a web page, and if there happens to be another link under that page you're on, the second click also activates.
Mm-hmm. Right, all right.
And, you probably haven't seen it, but South Park from last week
I haven't seen it.
The importance of reading the agreements before you click agree, because you never know what you're agreeing to.
Of course,
being
today,
South Park, it took it to the absurd extreme.
I got a call today that one of my credit cards was overdue.
Tell you what.
Was overdrawn, and my payment was overdue. I don't even know why I answer the phone. I never answer the phone on a Saturday morning because it's never anything but a fake call.
Mm-hmm.
But so, all right, I answered it. And the lady kept trying to get me to say things I wouldn't say. Can you tell me your home address? No. You can't tell me your home address? No. You called me. You should know my home address. If you're really calling from my bank, you know my home address. Well, can you give me the last four numbers of your credit card? No. If you called me from the bank, you already know that information. The poor woman was so frustrated, just so terribly frustrated that I would not give her any. Can you give me a phone number at which we can reach you? No. Can we reach you this one?
You just called.
No.
Not anymore.
That's exactly right.
Oh, I had one that called me up and said.
Well, now let me finish because she called me on my Google Voice number.
Oh, really?
I have no freaking idea how she got that.
Random dialing.
Random dialing.
Yeah.
What's beautiful about that is you can block numbers in Google. So while she was talking, I was in there going, yeah, okay, no, not this one anymore. Ever. Ever.
Sweet.
Ever.
Call ID is wonderful. We've been getting for months now a phone call that says local news from the Minneapolis St. Paul newspaper wanting us to subscribe. Because I Googled the phone number that keeps coming up. They got to be awful desperate for subscribers if they're calling around the country.
And when you should pick up the phone just once. Really? You can get me my local news?
Yeah.
Cool.
Terrific.
No, I was going to say, on the other side of that, is I've had, again, just this past week, somebody call up, and Sam goes, oh, it's for you. So, yes? Because she knows I love playing with these folks. And they go, yes, we were just there last week servicing your copier. We didn't get down the model number. And I go, oh, really? Which one were you servicing on?
Right.
Not sure. They didn't get it right. I said, well, which one? I mean, two models. And I said, I don't think you were here. Goodbye. Same thing. You know, just like to lead them on if we can.
Well, I'm beginning to think I should always give out my Google Voice number because I can block people.
Yeah. Oh, why not?
It's click, 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 and they're blocked forever.
Cool.
I love that idea. Anyway, we're going to go to the phone where we're not going to block Don from Hilton. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
Yeah, you were talking about there are now viruses on Linux. I happen to be, at this very moment, downloading Ubuntu 10.04.
Great.
Install, and maybe I shouldn't install it.
No, there are not viruses in it.
I know that, but I mean, if I can't get an antivirus for it.
Oh, you can. There are a dozen. In fact, there are viruses, antivirus programs that come with it. Okay. Once you have it installed, actually you want to go to the Security Tango website at securitytango.com, click on Let's Dance, and then click on the Linux Lambada, and it will tell you how to install ClamX, which is a free antivirus program. If you have Ubuntu, all you have to do is say sudo apt-get install ClamX.
Yeah, that's
ClamX
all.
AV.
Okay.
That's really all. Yep. I mean, that's very easy. What it does is it says, Sudo says, I'm doing this as the administrator, and it'll ask you for your password.
Uh-huh.
Aptitude is the program that installs and uninstalls all the programs. Right.
So is that, does that included in the Ubuntu?
Yeah,
or
well, yes.
Or do I need to go to the Security Tangle?
No, no. The Security Tangle will tell you how to do it, but it right inside. The beautiful thing about Ubuntu is there's like, I don't know, 150 gazillion packages, and one of them is the Clam antivirus program. Hold on, let me... Clam, yeah, Clam or Clam AV? Clam AV. It's called Clam AV. So you just say sudo aptitude. S-U-D-O is sudo. Aptitude is the name of the package that installs everything.
Okay.
Install Clam AV. Bang, up it comes. It installs it. It sets it up, and you're on your way.
Okay, very good. I was just suddenly worried because I decided I was going to... Finally, after hearing you guys talk about Linux for so long, I decided to break down and do it.
Right, right. No, I'm delighted that you're doing that. It's a great product. It's a great system, but you really want to make sure that you do install. All the stuff is free, and it's all included in the package, but it's not all installed by default.
Okay, thanks.
So once you have it, you can install it. You can also, of course, do it by going into, and in fact, this is easier. I don't know why I didn't think about this to begin with. Once you've got it installed, up at the very top left is the applications menu.
Uh-huh.
And at the bottom of that list is the Ubuntu Software Center.
Uh-huh.
And if you open that, you can search for antivirus.
Uh-huh.
There will be a bunch that come up, but the one you really want... is the one that in small print says Clam AV.
AZ, okay.
Clam AV.
Okay.
It's actually the bottom
AV,
one.
Antivirus.
Right.
Okay.
Or you could just search for Clam AV, I guess, and that would be even easier.
Okay.
Half a dozen
Once you know the
you.
Name, you're there.
Yeah, well, it isn't installed yet. It's in the process of downloading. Oh, one more thing.
Yeah.
I'm downloading... the 32, but I have my other computer is a 64-bit computer. Should I get the 64-bit version for that computer? Is that correct?
I'll tell you what. If you've got enough RAM and the minimum you want is 4 gig,
I have 6.
Perfect. The Linux will use it. The 64-bit version of Ubuntu will use all of it.
Okay.
And it'll be fast and nice.
Okay. Good.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
And welcome to the wonderful world of Linux. It's an adventure, and you'll be great at it.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right. I got a question here. Again, if you folks are out on the, you know, in the car and still want to ask a question and don't want to take the time to be hung up on the phone, you can quick text us at 585-209-9010, just like KC did here from Rochester. And he says, I built a computer with an ASUS P8P67 with an i7-2600 chip. BIOS says the temperature is 65 degrees Celsius, which seems hot. I removed the heat sink and redid it. In other words, he put new paste on it. No change. Download programs real temp, and it says 35 degrees Celsius. Which do I believe? Why the different readings? Thanks. I would tend to believe more the one built into the motherboard than some other program, because those are usually generic depending on the chip.
Right.
Because, you know, I mean, each chip is going to run hotter, or, you know, some aren't as hot as the others, and some can tolerate certain temperatures. And again, I would just go to the manufacturer and just verify versus that chip and motherboard what the acceptable temperatures are for that.
You also have to remember, if he has reseated the chip, that's one thing, but if he redid the heatsink, with the paste, you got to use that. There's really only
thermal
one
paste.
Brand that's any good.
Yep.
The silver or something silver, mm-hmm. something. You guys would know what it is.
Yep.
I don't.
Yeah, it's a very messy paste. You get it. It's like syrup.
You get it in little syringes.
Yeah, and you get it. It's also like syrup in that no matter how careful you try to be, it winds up on your hands.
Of course it does.
You know, it's like, ah! All
but do either of you remember the name for Casey?
Yes. Are we allowed to say it? Sure. Arctic Silver.
Arctic Silver, that was it.
Yep. Well, usually, it comes free with every processor. I mean,
yeah, most processors come with a couple of syringes. So yeah. I got boxes of extra syringes in my office, and heaven forbid someone come to the office who doesn't realize what they are.
Yeah. No, we're mainlining it. So there you go, KC, and it's as simple as that, folks. If you've got a question, you're out in the car and don't want to take the time to be hung up on the phone, you can text us, like I said, at 585-209-9010.
Not that we'll hang up on you, but you might be on hold a while.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. We mentioned earlier the Mac Defender Scareware Program. There's a German security company, MacDefender.org, and he has been inundated with people who don't know how to use Google, asking him why he's writing scareware programs. And so he took all his English website down, and now it's just in German. And the first thing about Mac Defender is it's MAC all caps. And those of it, well, see, that's the problem. If you know it's a fake, you know it's a fake, but Mac is not an acronym. It's a shortening for Macintosh.
So it's not all caps.
It's not all caps.
Capital M, lowercase a, lowercase C.
Yeah. I always get a kick out of asking PC users what's their Mac address, and that, well, I have a PC. I know, but in this case, Mac is an acronym, and you do have one.
Right, right, right.
In fact, you may have several. One for Ethernet, one for Wi-Fi. One.
Right. Oh, we had one on an HP. The Mac address wouldn't come up, and Dan had to go through all these programs. What had happened was, is the HP, I guess, in some incidents we found out on the web, can blow even its serial number inside.
Burned into brown, yeah.
Yeah, and it lost it, so you had to go through this whole procedure to get it back in there. Then it would then recognize a MAC address. Otherwise, it wouldn't.
Yeah, when we get new motherboards from Apple to put into computers, they all come with an empty serial number. And one of the things that we have to do is burn that serial number into the motherboard, so then the end user has their serial number if they need it later. Which is interesting, because there's like 16 warnings. Are you sure this is the number you want to burn? And you always have to make sure you get it right, because if you get it wrong, apparently there's no easy way to unburn it unless you have your own EEPROM programmer.
Right.
Which apparently are quite expensive.
Yes, they are.
Yep.
Yes, they are. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. If you're on the line, stay on the line, please. If you're not on the line, why not? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. While we're giving out text numbers, if you'd like to know what some of the acronyms that we use on the show are, you can text the Soundbites acronym, well, the Soundbites Google Voice number, which is 585-348-8255 or Fit Talk. And if you send help, it'll tell you what you can do. You can get stock symbols, local weather, and you can define an acronym. So if you send define MAC, it will tell you all the things that MAC could
stands
mean.
For.
And standard text rates apply. Our next caller, our friend Linda from Greece. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Okay. I've got a question. Somebody said to me at work, because I was telling him I was using Mozilla and all that, and he says, why don't you try Google Chrome? I went on the website, and as far as I'm concerned, it's all Greek to me.
Okay.
I do not understand. You know, so maybe you can break it down into plain English. What is Google Chrome? I'm scared to try it. What is Google Chrome, and why should I use it?
Google Chrome is a new web browser. Mm-hmm. Like Mozilla Firefox is a web browser, like Internet Explorer sure. is a web browser. And what's different about it is that it's lightweight. It has some extra features. There's all kinds of neat little things about it.
It's everything Firefox was when it mm-hmm. started. And yeah, now right. Firefox has gotten big and bloated.
Yeah.
Right. It's lighter and faster. It also has the web store, so you can add web apps into it, games as well as all kinds of stuff. And it's just a good, fast, lightweight browser. If you're happy with Firefox, stick with Firefox. There's no law that says you have to move over.
Is there a place that has a step-by-step guide that tells you everything you want to know about Google Chrome before you try it?
I don't know about everything you'd want.
I'm used to, I guess what I'm saying is I'm used to the taskbar across the top that has, you know, all the settings. And I'm just wondering, you know, will I get lost there and not be able to find anything? I'm a creature of habit.
I understand that. Well, the bar looks very, very much the same. But if you were to go to
Chrome.google.com.
Chrome.google.com or Google.com/Chrome, one or the other, you would get it. And one of the nice things about that site is if you look down on the right, there's a link that says Learn About Google Chrome.
Ah.
And if you go to that site, if you click on that link, it tells you why should you use it. There's an overview and features and speed and security, and they have videos about all of those things, and it tells you a lot about how it works.
Oh, well, you know, because,
looks completely,
you know,
different on my
this guy's a
Chrome
computer geek. He knows everything. And I told him, he says, you should use it. I says, I'm going to call the guys on Saturday and ask them, you know, because he thinks I should get everything. Well, this guy screwed up my machine, so I'm not so sure I trust him. So I thought I'd call you guys.
There you go.
Right. I don't know what to tell you. You're on a different site than I'm on.
I'm using Chrome for Mac, and I get to a different place than you do. You're using Chrome for Linux, right?
Yeah, but you said, go back a page.
Well,
we're confused. We're looking at two different pages from the same.
Well, I'm in Chrome. If I go to chrome.google.com and spell it right, I actually end up at the regular Google search page. But google.com/Chrome... I get to, here's how you can download it and learn more about Chrome. See, and it's a completely different website than you're getting on your computer.
Because I'm getting the one that's for Linux.
Ah, and I'm getting the one for Mac. And if you're on Windows, you'll get the one for Windows.
Right.
That's why it looks different. Sneaky buggers.
Sneaky buggers.
Okay. Ta-da.
Well, what Steve is going to do is put the Why Use Google Chrome link on our website at soundbites.org.
Great, great. I have a comment. You know, I listen to you guys. And I think it was last Mother's Day, and somebody says, well, you gentlemen should go out there. But they're not their mothers. And I thought that was very funny when you said, last year, you said, gentlemen, you know, you should get something for your wife. And I thought to myself, but they're not their mothers.
No, well, that's true. But if you want to sleep with both eyes closed,
yeah.
It's never a bad idea to say to your wife just one more reason for us to go out and have
that,
a date.
I just thought that was funny. I go, well, they're not their mothers.
The mother,
that's right.
The mother of my children that
yes.
I know of.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, Linda. Yep.
And like you say, if you want to sleep with one eye open, that's your prerogative.
That's your prerogative. Right. I sent my wife flowers at work yesterday so that all her office got to see her get them, which...
Yes. You're the hero.
It's a double win on my part. Thank you very much.
But we should remind the other folks that it is Mother's Day tomorrow.
Yep. And because of that, if those of you who are complete geeks and don't really spend a lot of time in the real world, it would not be a bad idea to pick up some nice flowers for your significant other. Just to say I love you and or I care about you or I'd rather not sleep on the couch. However that works for you. And it's not a bad idea to be reminded every once in a while that you are loved. So do that for your significant other, the mother of your children, and it's a very nice thing to do. All right, our next caller is Bruce from Hilton, New York. Lots of calls from Hilton today.
Yeah.
Bruce, are you there? Bruce, hello? Yeah. No, apparently...
Bruce? Dave tries pushing another button. Let's see what happens.
No, this thing has been acting up.
Bruce?
Hold on.
Hold on. We're looking for Bruce. Bruce, don't go away. We're trying to see if we can find you. Dave's trying percussive maintenance now.
Reprogram it with a very large X.
Exactly. He's coming around the back to see if in fact he has to burn something. He's got a soldering iron. This is not. Put down the axe. What? Oh my God in heaven! It's I'm hearing something. I'm hearing clicking noises.
I hear those all the time.
Yeah. This is not your jaw. Yep.
Here's the phone. All right.
Sorry, Bruce. Call back. Bruce, I hope that's Bruce calling back. Yep. Excellent. Okay, so give us a second. We'll get Bruce from Hilton on the line. And once we do, we'll be able to talk to our friend Bruce from Hilton.
Yeah.
Are you there?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Second time's the charm, apparently.
Well, I just made a Windows 7 repair boot disk, CD here. And
yeah.
Now, when I'm in the BIOS, what is the best configuration for the boot? When the computer is booting, do you want the hard drive first? Do you want the CD first?
Well, if you want to boot from the CD has to be first.
Yeah.
All right. So, like, if it ever crashes, then that's the best boot order.
Yeah, it's the best boot order then. But once the system is up and running, change the boot order back to hard drive first.
It'll just go a little faster.
Oh, okay.
In addition to that, it means that somebody can't walk up to your machine, stick a CD in there, and take control of everything.
Oh, that's why. Oh, okay. All right. That's what I wanted to know. Because I wanted to know if it was like I had to set it permanently for booting into the CD or not.
Well, that's the other thing, though. If you really want full control,
the short answer is no. It's not permanent. You can set that on the fly as you wish.
Yeah. So even if it crashed, I could still get into the post screen and change it.
Yeah.
As long as it's not like your power supply or whatever, which is not. You know, this is for when the hard drive crashes.
Right.
Yeah. And
you'll still be able to get into the post.
The only thing is if you're worried about somebody changing the configuration, I don't think it's too much of an issue at home. But if you were saying, like Nick was saying, you don't want somebody else putting a CD and booting it, you can then also put a master password to get into the BIOS. So in other words, folks just can't go in there and arbitrarily. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
New mouth. I'm trying to get it. Change things on you and you have full control.
Well, thanks for your help, guys. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, our pleasure. Good luck. Have fun.
Okay, bye-bye.
That's one of the little secrets. You should never leave the CD as the initial boot device.
Mm-hmm, right.
But once in a while, you need it. So the BIOS actually has nothing to do with the hard drive. It comes before the hard drive. So if your hard drive crashes, you still can get into the BIOS, set the CD to be the initial boot device, save it, boot, and whatever's in the CD will boot up.
That reminds me, this happened, last fall. Worked on a client's machine, talking about boot orders. Got their machine up and working, no problem. So, delivered it, got it all set up. Following day, I get this phone call. I thought you said you fixed this thing. Yeah, we did. It's working fine. You saw it. Well, I go to boot it up this morning, and it won't boot. I go, there's nothing, in the drives of that? Nope, nothing's going. I just turn it on, and it don't go anywhere. You got to get out here. I got some work to do. I said, all right. But I says, if you realize, if it's nothing we did, you're getting charged a service call. Well, I didn't do anything. Well, you want me to come out? Yeah. So I go out there. And he's still saying, we didn't fix it. We didn't do anything right to it, because it ain't working. So I walk in. I go turn the machine on. Sure enough, it's not booting anywhere. And I look down because it was trying to boot off the A drive, and he had a disk in there that was just saving documents.
And it should have come up and said, no OS found or something like that.
So the minute I popped out the disk that it was his and hit the reboot, gee, guess what happened?
Booted right up.
It went right up into Windows. And he just sort of looked at me and goes, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Have a good day.
And here's my bill.
Here's my bill.
1 hour minimum plus travel.
I had that the other day. My Linux machine at work, I rebooted it because I got some updates that needed rebooting. I rebooted it, and it came up and said, NT loader not found. wouldn't go any farther.
Mm-hmm.
And your first thought is, oh, crap, my hard drive just failed.
Okay, my hard drive. My second thought was, NT loader?
I'm not using NT.
This is a Linux machine. At which point I realized that I had left a USB port in it, and I had been, one of the reasons I had to reboot it is because I'd been playing around with some stuff, and I had set the USB to boot because yep. I was Oops. Testing a recover USB thing that we had, and I forgot to set it back and left my USB in there, and you know the story now, but there's that moment.
Oops.
When your machine reboots and ZC, NT loader not available in your heart just drops. Because this is my production desktop. And then you realize, NT loader? NT loader should never be found. That should be a happy message on my machine.
I had one this morning. I was trying to get a customer's hard drive powered up and to back up their computer, and it wouldn't turn on. So I check, it's plugged in. It's plugged into the power strip. The power strip is turned on, and I just wrote down, all right, hard drive doesn't work, and moved on. And then I plug the computer in, and the computer won't power up either because the power strip had slipped out of the socket.
crap! Exactly.
Oops.
Exactly.
But I did check it at both ends. I just didn't know there was a third end.
We have people who consistently blow their circuits by plugging in space heaters. In the winter, for their feet. I don't know what it is about.
Just put their computer on the floor.
Well, that's what I keep telling them. and they keep complaining that our computers are cheap and they're blowing all the circuits. No. Mm-hmm. Look, you're not supposed to have space heaters to begin with. And the fact that you've plugged them into the same power strip that has the computer in it means you're back surging, blah, blah, blah. Anyway. We have that constantly, so now we provide them with a separate power strip just for their space heaters, and when those blow, we just tell them, hit this little button to reset it. Until the next time it blows, hit the button to reset it. Now they're complaining to maintenance that the space heaters they've been given are crappy. But the problem is no longer mine. Oh. I win.
So then you can charge their department to run a separate electrical circuit to their office.
Yeah, right.
That's the alternative, yeah.
Well, that's the answer, and I keep telling them that. One lady, very smart woman, she asked the maintenance guy, where's a different circuit?
Yeah.
And he said, well, there's a different one there, and there's a different one there. And the second one he pointed to was across to the next cubicle where nobody was sitting at that time.
Ah.
So there was nothing else in that circuit, so she ran a cable over the wall and plugged in over there, and she was fine until they moved somebody into that cubicle.
Yep.
All right, here's a news item. Do we have time for a news item? No. No, apparently we do not. That's a very subtle way of telling me that. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Please give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415, and we would be thrilled, if not actually delighted, to speak to you on the air if Dave doesn't drop the call. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and me. It's Soundbites on Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
At 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
I still like this, too. Huey Lewis.
And it is 59 degrees, for those of you who need to know that.
That's Van Halen.
Is it?
Jump.
I thought it was Huey Lewis.
All right, you guys fight that out. No, I have the news.
I'm too old to remember.
What does it say right in front of you on the screen? Doesn't it say something about what that song is?
Nope.
Color?
Nope.
Break?
Random.
All it says is SB Music.
Okay.
Because what it is when I click on that button, he's got a bunch of them compiled in there. So when I click on it, I don't know what tune I don't get to pick because there are some in there. I'd like to add some others. But
although I rarely recognize any song past about 1580, I'd have to say that strikes me more as a Van Halen tune than a Huey Lewis tune.
From 1995.
Yeah. All right, cyber criminals have been quick to pounce on internet users scouring the internet for information about one of the biggest news events of the last decade, the death of Osama bin Laden. Within hours of the news that U.S. forces had killed the al-Qaeda leader in Pakistan on Sunday, malware began popping up on websites optimized to appear on web searches related to bin Laden's death. Scammers took advantage of the phrase Osama bin Laden dead being the most popular Google search term on Monday, luring internet users to links supposedly containing photos, videos, and other information surrounding bin Laden's death. However, many links have been tainted with malware, infecting users' computers when they are prompted to download a file or watch a video. Image and video searches have been easy targets for scammers as people scramble for visual images of bin Laden. A doctored photo supposedly taken after bin Laden was killed was found accompanying a news story and video containing malicious software. Spammers also targeted Facebook. Now there's a shocker. Circulating messages offering fake deals from Subway and Southwest Airlines. When the bogus link is clicked, users are redirected to pages and enticed to enter personal information and email addresses. Users are urged to be cautious of any links promising photos or videos of bin Laden, as no official photos have been released of bin Laden's body after his death was reported. Similar scams were reported after the recent earthquake in Japan. Cybercriminals typically exploit significant news events because they encourage users to click on attractive headlines. So our question to you is, did you see any of these scams? Did you get caught? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Of course, the deathers won't believe it until they see the actual death certificate.
The deathers. We have birthers. We have deathers. You know what would be really, really nice? Thinkers.
Yeah.
But apparently we're not getting
well,
a lot
you
of
want
those.
Everything, don't
I
you?
I do want Jeez. Everything. Apparently. And a cherry on top.
Apparently Al-Qaeda confirmed it, and now they're mad at Pakistan.
Right. Right.
And then somebody pulled a 3-year-old interview with Christiane Anampour from CNN, and she said 3 years ago that bin Laden was living in a palace in Pakistan. And then on the Colbert Report, they were talking about it, and apparently the city he was hiding in was 40 miles across the border from where he was based earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like he said, that's like you're the most wanted man in Washington D.C., so you hide out in Baltimore.
He was 1,000 yards from their equivalent of West Point.
Yeah. And they asked the neighbors, what did you
if
think of the high walls?
If one guy stood on another guy's shoulders, he would have seen him.
No, they had 20-foot walls with barbed wire on top. So the neighbors said, well, we thought they wanted their privacy.
Person just went, thought deathers was a pretty good guy.
I forgot that probably found that on Dvorak.
Yeah, somebody's, that's what they're calling them now. It's a... You know, with all the real things going on, it's just kind of, let's not get silly about it.
Mm.
Apple, on Wednesday, released iOS, not the one from Cisco, 4.3.3, left elbow J, which solves what Apple called a bug with its location-based services. A bug. This update contains changes to the iOS crowdsourced location database cache, according to the update. Specifically, it reduces the size of the cache, no longer backs up the cache to iTunes, and deletes the cache entirely when location services are turned off. At issue is the location-based data collected by devices running iOS 4. Last month, researchers said that information was stored in an insecure manner and accessible to anyone who stumbled upon your iPhone, iPad, or the computer with which you synced your iOS device. That prompted concern that Apple and anyone who looked at those data could track your whereabouts. In an April 27th Q&A posted on its website, Apple denied tracking its users. Apple is not tracking the location of your iPhone. Apple has never done so and has no plans to ever do so, the company said. The researchers, however, said that since the release of iOS 4, all location data have been stored on a file known as consolidated.db, which is backed up to your computer whenever you sync your iPhone. In that Q&A, Apple said the reason the iPhone stores so much data is a bug we uncovered. It's a bug and plans to fix shortly. That fix is in the iOS 4.3.3 update. Going forward, the iPhone will not be stored, will not store more than 7 days of these data, according to Apple, and it will not sync with iTunes. There was also concern that location services still collected data even when that option was turned off. It shouldn't. We know that, Apple. Thanks. This is a bug which we plan to fix shortly, Apple said last month. According to iOS 4.3.3, this problem should no longer be an issue. The issue over iPhone tracking has prompted a class action lawsuit as well as inquiries from Congress. Apple is scheduled to appear at a hearing on May 10th before the Senate Judiciary Committee to further discuss the issue. Google will also be in attendance, and everybody on earth is going to cover that. So, good news, Apple is going to stop doing what they said they weren't doing in the first place. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And Mr. Tribble goes to Washington.
Who goes to Washington?
Mr. Tribble. The trouble with Mr. Tribble is going to Washington.
That's right.
Mr. Bud Tribble from Apple is going to testify.
Right.
So, you know, they're looking forward to all of the jokes.
Right. It's going to be fairly amazing. You know, Apple and Google have been using that service, and as everybody says, it's specifically to make it faster to connect to a cell phone and faster to get your mapping stuff and yada yada yada. But the problem both of them have is that in neither case do they let you opt in. They just did it. And in Apple's case, they actually save it to your hard drive so that pretty much anybody with access to your machine can get at it, which is, I think, a breach of privacy. Anyway, our next caller is Howard from Irondequoit. Welcome, Howard. What's your question?
Hello, Nick. I was doing the Security Tango, and I downloaded the AVG antivirus.
Yeah.
And when I was running it, it said several files were locked, and so it could not scan those. How do I unlock them?
What you need to do is run AVG as the administrator.
I thought I was. Okay.
Yeah. And if you, well, it thinks you aren't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So just run it as administrator and you should be in fairly good shape.
Okay. I will try that.
Okie doke.
Thanks a bunch.
Thanks.
Well, sometimes there are system files that are locked that you can't unlock and shouldn't unlock, right?
Well, but if you're the administrator, you should be able to grab them in read-only mode. That is a problem with Windows. Windows is very bad about allowing that, and it really is an issue. We see that a lot on the Mac and on Windows. On the Mac and on Linux, when you go to a read-only file as the administrator, you can go to a locked file as the administrator. You can still read it. You can't make changes to it necessarily. But you can read it, and that's really all the antivirus has to do unless there's a problem.
Right.
So it can read it and say, okay, it's good. I don't have to worry about talking to the owner about unlocking this or dealing with it in right. any way. I just move on.
So he might want to check the exact error message, and if it was something like it's locked and I can't clean it versus it's locked, okay, I'm moving on.
Right. Yeah. Right. Absolutely
if it's
right.
infected and locked and it can't be cleaned, that's a different issue.
Right. All right, we're going to another caller, but we're staying in Irondequoit, and we're going to talk to Chick. Welcome, Chick. What's your question?
My question is I was having a problem with the installer, and the disk which came from Dell, I reinstalled it, and, of course, I lost a lot of data.
Right.
And I hope it can be retrieved. The next question is the cost factor involved in doing all these things. And I was wondering, maybe you will suggest to just go and buy another computer.
Well, here's the deal, Chick. If you, in fact, had a reinstall done, whether you did it yourself or somebody else did it, the likelihood is high that all the data you had are lost.
Yep.
They're not recoverable.
Because they usually reformat it.
That's one of the problems with doing a reinstall. From the original operating system.
There's usually a difference between reinstall and restore.
Well,
if you
usually
restore, you should see all your data. So if, in fact, you don't see your data, you probably did a reinstall.
I would say it's the other way around.
Well,
reinstall overwrites what's there. Restore erases everything and restores for the original factory.
Yeah, because usually the Dell will restore everything back to factory specs. In other words, like the day you took it out of the box, nothing else is set up, no other documents, anything else are gone.
Yeah. And it's possible the data is still somewhere on the hard drive that hasn't been overwritten.
Yes.
But it's very difficult and very expensive to get back. Most of the commercial recovery services are several thousands of dollars.
Wow.
But, Chick, if you're really calling us so that we give you our blessing to buy a new computer,
go for it.
You absolutely have it.
Okay.
Now tell whoever
is that which computer I should be buying, maybe switch to laptop. This is the tabletop which I'm talking.
Right. Well, a laptop is certainly easier to carry, but it is also more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not planning on carrying it anywhere, save the money or put that money into more power in the machine.
Yeah, it depends on what you're going to do with it also. I mean, you know, sometimes a laptop will serve your needs, but if you're going to get into a lot of gaming, want to add other things onto it.
Your tabletop, you know.
Yeah. So you just got to kind of sit back and assess what you want to do with it, and then from there, whether a laptop will fit the needs or a desktop.
Yeah, laptops.
If I go with desktop, I will shy away from Dell, of course.
That's a lovely idea.
Yep. There you go.
All right.
Now the question is, then, which is my option?
In terms of what?
HP or is anything else? Or?
I would do some shopping around.
Yep.
Here's one thing you can do.
Yes.
Feel free to go to the Soundbites webpage at soundbites.org. And check out some of the links there at the top, the pictures on the top. If you click on them, they'll take you to a couple of the local vendors and you can look at their stuff.
Okay.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's what's interesting is that most of the PC vendors are pretty much the same. There's the really cheap tier, and then there's the medium tier, and there's the expensive tier.
Again, it's what you want to spend.
Yeah.
And one thing I've
difference got between a Ford and a Mercedes sometimes. You know, they're both cars that go down the road, but you spend more on one, and hopefully the build quality is better.
Right. I do have to take one quick break here for a second, just make an announcement that Jazz 90.1 has their concert series going on. And what I mean by that, folks, if you're a particular musician and want to be discovered, right now, Jazz 90.1 is taking applications for their fall 2011 to 2012 live studio concert. Yes, from October 2011 to May 2012, we have local musicians here in the studio doing a live concert. So if you've always dreamt about being able to get on the air and be heard, this is your chance. If you go to jazz90.901.org, go to the main page and scroll down, you'll see Musicians Sought for 2011-12 Concert Series. There's a area there where you can click on it and fill out the application and be considered for next year's upcoming jazz concert series.
Can I get in? I play Hambone.
Sure. Fill out the application.
And the Jaws harp.
Hey. All you can, you know, you just got to get past
that. Unfortunately, I don't play banjo anymore because of my arthritis and my carpal tunnel.
Oh, yeah, that.
Well, the carpal tunnel, really. The arthritis, it's actually good for that.
Yeah.
For the carpal tunnel, it's really, really, really bad.
I can't get over, though, since I've taken back to the guitar. You know, you were telling me, you know, because I was getting to the point where, man, stretching this right hand, opening it up, I was like you, getting it running under hot water and everything else to get it going.
If it weren't for the carpal tunnel, I'd be playing every day. But now the carpal tunnel, 10 minutes of playing and my hands go numb.
Yeah.
So I'm done. I'm done with that. But that's too bad. But that is the way the world works.
Yeah. No, it's been great for mine. The swelling's gone down. And I wake up in the morning, it's like, whoa.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, I'm having a lot of fun with it, too.
Exactly.
I just play loudly and nobody else can hear me because I got the headphones on.
Well, that's what's important. It's the one really nice thing about electronic instruments is that if you're in a headphone, you're not disturbing the rest of the world. And yet you can be as loud and as not...
Unless you forget and start singing along.
Yeah. Man, I'll tell you what. I don't care how good a singer you really are. When you're singing to headsets, you suck.
Yeah.
You absolutely suck. I have some friends who are very, very good. My daughter, lovely singer. She's taking lessons at school. They love her. It's great. But when she sings to her headset, I don't know what it is. Everybody is always off key. I don't get it.
I remember once when I was a teenager, I was visiting my brother and listening to his stereo, had the giant cans on.
Oh, I love those.
And I cranked it way up and I'm getting into it. My dad comes over and smacks me. Because apparently when you plug the headphones in on my brother's stereo, it doesn't turn off the other speakers.
Oops. Oh, yeah, that.
Yeah, no, I mean, for the most part, you know, nobody's around to hear me, so I can just, you know, at night, I just plug it in. And
oh, golly, I have a great story about headsets that I can't tell over the air. All righty, then. Never mind. I'll just keep that one to myself.
Is that another one like the solar panel?
No, this is not a joke. This is a good one.
Oh, really?
Never mind. It's a whole other story.
And I can't tell it. This could be maybe for Nick's story hour sometime.
No. I can't tell this story over the air. That's what I'm saying about that. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Please feel free to give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-4415. And we would be delighted to talk to you on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We're going to take a little break so our underwriters can speak their piece. And we'll come back. Please feel free to give us a call. We got a whole lot more computer stuff, a whole lot more news, a whole lot more nonsense from us. You never know what's going to happen or who's going to do it. Right here on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, on the truly great, member-supported, and thank you again, all those of you who pledged and became members of the family, on Jazz 90.1.
Sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. That was never 5 minutes just now.
Yes, it was.
No, actually, it wasn't. It was only four.
Oh, well.
Did you pay for the 5 minutes or the full half hour?
Oops.
All right. We're going to give up on Monty Python for a few moments and go back to Don from Hilton. Welcome back, Don. What's your question?
Yeah, well, I'm in the process of installing the Ubuntu on my 64-bit computer, and I come up to a thing that says allocate drive space, and it has the thing up here. It says SDA1, and it says 104.9 megabytes, then another SDA2, and it's 988.4 gig, and then another SDA3, which says 11.7 gig.
Right.
And I don't know what to do next. I'm afraid I don't want to screw up what I have.
Right. If you want this to be a dual boot machine.
Yes.
Then you don't change any of the partitions you already have, but you have to know what's in them. Okay, so you've got three partitions on that drive.
Yeah.
What's in them, do you know?
Ooh.
Right. Here's what you need to do.
One partition is the main partition.
Right.
And then the one partition is the, I believe, the software that's loaded on, the backup. Now, I don't know what that little one is.
Well, here's what you need to do.
Yeah.
You need to stop what you're doing and reboot into Windows.
Okay.
Go and look at your C and D drives and see what size they are.
Okay.
And that will tell you which is where.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you want to, you can resize one of those.
Uh-huh.
But that is always a difficult process.
Uh-huh.
And what you want to do is back everything up before you do that.
Okay.
What you will probably find is the first partition is your boot partition with your operating system on it. Your second partition is the partition that has all of your data on it, and that third partition is the one that Windows always leaves behind.
Mm-hmm.
So what you likely want to do is make that second partition smaller, and I can't tell you how much smaller, only you know how much mm-hmm. data are on your drive, and then you can put Linux on that third partition. But let me remind you that you need to back up everything on your machine before you do that, because repartitioning drives is perilous.
Okay.
If you do it wrong, you lose everything.
Yeah, I have some special partitioning software, but
use that.
Well, that could be what one of those little partitions are. What size did you say those partitions were again?
Well, one partition is 104.9 meg, And then the other one is 11.7 gig. And the other one is 988.4 gig.
So that 100 meg partition is probably your special partitioning software creating the other partitions.
Okay.
And then you've got
a 100. Double check.
Yeah, then you've got a 100 gig partition and a 900 gig partition on apparently a 1 terabyte hard drive.
Yeah. Right, but we without sitting there and seeing it, I can't tell you that.
No, but this screen that came up had me completely confused. Then it said something about a new partition table.
Yeah, basically it's asking where you want to put the operating system. And it's asking you to pick which hard drive volume you want to put it on. So you have to know which one is empty and which one you want to put that new OS on without erasing your old OS.
Okay. So it can't go in the same partition with my other OS.
New.
It has to be a new partition.
Yes.
So if I hit the thing that says new partition table, I would put it in the large partition then.
Right.
Well, no, wait. Wouldn't new partition table will probably erase your hard drive and create a whole new partition table.
Yeah, here's what I think you should do, because when we're not seeing what you're seeing, so it's very dangerous.
Okay, this thing I clicked on that just said, it says create new empty partition table on this device.
And you want to say no, you want to get out of there. You do not want to be there. Listen to me before we go any further.
Yeah.
It's very dangerous for us to give you any advice at all right now because we're not seeing what's on your screen.
Okay.
Your best bet is to go to the lugor.org website, which is the Linux Users Group of Rochester, and check to see when their next install fest is. Unfortunately, they don't have information about May on the thing. Lots of information about March and April. Nothing about May yet. Apparently, they live in the past, so I can't tell you what, when, or where the next group meeting will be.
Okay.
I'm sure that's a single oversight that they've never made before on this page. But you should probably make contact with them and find out when their next install fest is.
Okay.
They have those once in a while. You bring your computer down, and they help you install your operating system of choice.
We missed the Natty Narwhal Global Jam.
Yes, they probably didn't put out. They probably didn't put that up until April 3rd.
Okay, no, it's called Lugor,
Linux Users Group of Rochester.
Oh, Lugor. Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
All right.
I'm sorry to keep bugging you, but
no. We'd rather have you call us than get it wrong.
This is a little bit confusing, and this is why I subscribed. sent money in.
Yep. All right. Thank you. That's what we like to hear.
I'm getting more than my money's worth.
Thank you. Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen. We appreciate all of our members. Don, a member of the Soundbites family, a member of the Jazz 90.1 family. We love all our brothers and sisters who have become members of the family. Thank you very much. And we're delighted to hear you're getting your money's worth. Send in more next time. All right. And they're all calling from around Iroquois today. Our next caller is Victor. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
When I downloaded Firefox 4.0, I couldn't print, so I ended up going back to Firefox 3.1, 6. Something. I don't remember now.
Yep.
And I went back, and it was no problem. But now I noticed the other day that Firefox has got a 4.01. I think it's 01 or 10.
Yep.
Yeah, 401.
Yeah, now, is my not printing my issue, or is that a known issue with Firefox?
It's a known issue.
I would expect
on some printers.
What the 4.01 update is supposed to fix, although I haven't really looked.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Did that 01 fix that issue? Because I don't want to touch it.
Well, on that on the Get Firefox page, it will. I'm trying to
address
get it right
that.
Now. It will tell. It typically tells you what they updated.
Okay. By any chance, do you happen to know? I don't have my computer on.
Not a fan, no.
Oh, okay. All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Actually, I don't see what they updated or what's new or
Joe, where are you
features. See, that's just the regular features. Usually there's an update list somewhere.
Yeah, there usually is.
Especially because it's open source, yeah.
Right.
Usually the update list is pages and pages and pages.
Yeah, right.
Here's what we fixed.
All right, our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. Hey, Joe, what do you know?
Hey, guys, I got a complaint. I think it deserves to be in Dave's corner.
Uh-oh.
Woohoo!
about us, is it?
Is it just me, or is I'm really getting frustrated with all these websites are being Flash-based now. It just seems like even Google now has gone to Flash-based. Well, it's got to do the fancy fade-in, the fancy fade-out. Nothing loads like it used to anymore.
Well, yep. You're preaching to the choir about Flash. We hate it as much as you do.
yeah.
But the Google site is not Flash. It is HTML5.
Okay.
We'll just throw this in the back for Joe, just to make him feel part
Joe.
Of it.
This is not Uncle Dave's story hour. This is just Joe. you're absolutely right, though, Joe. I hate Flash-based sites, too.
Awesome.
What's fascinating about Flash, of course, is that Google doesn't search it. Google can't search inside Flash.
Okay.
So if your site is all Flash, you're not on Google much.
Okay.
And the worst sites are the ones that just have a giant Flash icon with no text alternative.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right. You can get into the Google search if you have the text alternatives, but a lot of places don't. And yeah, Flash is to me, the bane of the Internet's existence.
It's terrible.
I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it. But, you know, it's kind of everywhere.
So, you know, so even that in Google, like you said, it's HTML5. So when you, after you do your search and then you want to go to another search, when you click the next page of Google search,
mm-hmm.
it fades in and it fades out. That's all HTML5? Or
that's HTML5. It is not Flash.
Okay.
Yeah, Google doesn't do a lot of Flash, except, of course, on their YouTube site.
Right.
And they're trying to move that over to HTML5 as well.
Okay. A lot of YouTube has already switched to H.264. Yep. The Flash,
yeah, H.264.
Flash basically has two pieces to it. It's an animation program to make things, you know, jump and dance, and it's a video wrapper to play videos. And there are much better video formats to use, and so websites like YouTube and many of the other ones have already switched to H.264, which is a much better video wrapper. And the Flash animation people are basically, what's the word I want? Legacy. because Adobe has been pushing Flash for 15 years now. And Adobe doesn't want to give up. In fact, Adobe has a program out with a crazy name that converts Flash to HTML5. What was the name of that? It's on.
And everybody who is putting their website in Flash should really use that.
Wallaby.
First, if you don't, all the iPad users can't go there. Now, that may not seem like a big deal to you now, but I guarantee you within the next 2 years,
mm-hmm.
the it's number like of people using iPads and the number of people
iPads
using
and
Chrome
iPhones.
Device or Android devices yep. Who have turned off their Flash because it uses the battery so much is going to be very, very, very high.
Yeah, if you have a Flash-only website, you're leaving out 100 million people who can't look at your page.
Well, and then I said, well, so what? There aren't that many Mac users. Okay, so let's say you own a store, and you go and stand in the doorway and turn away all the people with red hair. Well, mm-hmm. there aren't that many of them. Maybe you don't need their business. I personally, as a businessman, don't want to turn anybody away from my door ever for any reason.
Because those folks that you talk turn away could turn around and talk to other folks, telling them not to come.
Right. Now, if your website is all about, you know, how cute your puppy is and how sweet your cat is, then you do what you want. I don't care. You're not, you know, whatever. But if you're actually talking about a site that you want people to go to, then you probably want to do something different. Why? We just had a beep for Joe. Joe must have hung up, or you.
Oh, I'm here.
Joe.
I heard
Joe's
the beep
still
too.
There. All right. Did we even come close to answering your question?
It's just you're confirming the frustration.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Yep. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
And it's a fight that Apple and Adobe have been having for what, 4 or 5 years now, with the iOS not supporting Flash at all.
Right.
And although that is now a marketing feature for Android tablets, we support Flash, but not yet.
Right.
we will support Flash eventually.
My hope, of course, is that at some point we can turn off Flash.
Yeah,
and the Android tablets, because I just don't really care. All right, our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Hi, I've got a new laptop, and I've got two questions on it. One is, what program should I put on it before I do anything else? And the other is, how do I transfer things like bookmarks and passwords?
What operating system on the old one and the new one?
The old is XP. The new is Windows 7.
Okay, because there is the Microsoft's file settings and transfer wizard, but I don't think it will go from XP to 7.
Okay.
You were supposed to have upgraded to Vista in the middle there. So XP will go to Vista, and then Vista will go to 7. Your bookmarks depend on which browser you're using, but it's basically just a text file in one of your document and setting folders, usually application support, something like that. If you Google copy bookmarks with from Firefox, it will tell you exactly where that file is on the old computer.
Okay.
And then you just copy it to a flash drive or something and put it into that location on the new computer.
Okay.
And
you could take a look at the settings and transfer wizard in Microsoft XP. Steve's going to put up a link to that in just a minute, and that'll tell you about that. I do not honestly know that it will go, as Steve said, we do not honestly know if it'll go from XP to 7.
Okay.
But it certainly can't hurt to try it first and see where it takes you. But Steve is also right. There's a bookmarks.html file for your browser, and there is passwords are a little tougher, but the rest of it should go over fine. And the first thing you should put on your computer is Revo Uninstaller.
Yes.
Actually, the first thing you should put on your computer is a good antivirus program.
Right.
The second thing you should put on is a good anti-spyware program. And the third thing you should put on is Revo Uninstaller.
Okay.
Well, no, I'd even put... No, I'd put Revo...
No, you're right. Put Revo first.
So that it knows the others.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, is there anything else that I should put on before I...
No, you go with that. And
I'm sure somebody
happy
in
computing.
The IRC chat is saying Linux.
Yeah, get rid of Windows and put on Linux.
Right. Okay, well, thanks for all your continuing help.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Sorry.
It's always fun getting a new computer, and some people like to copy everything from their old computer so it looks just like the old one did, and some people like nothing from the old computer so it starts out clean.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. Don't forget, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be glad to talk to you. It is only 19 minutes after the hour, so you have plenty of time to call into the longest running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. All right, kiddies, here we go. Get your footy jammies on, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. Because if we can slap him awake, it's time for story hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, yeah. Yep. You know what? This takes me back to my days of Miss Eberwine. Mrs. Eberwine was my first grade teacher.
Wow.
Who, when I was doing something that I shouldn't have been doing.
Can you remember across the centuries that far back?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was the last century, wasn't it?
Exactly.
She'd come over and slap your hand with a ruler. And that's just about what I feel like doing on some of these folks that just go ahead and click on anything without reading or paying attention to what it is. And by that, I mean folks will say, well, I went ahead, it was coming from a friend, and the title in it wasn't kind of suspicious. Well, I don't know. I figure I can trust them. No!
You can trust them. You can't trust their computer.
Yes, exactly. And you could be getting stuff because they're infected. If you're that curious, oh, there's still this thing called the telephone. Pick it up. Use it! Because you know what? It might save your machine from getting infected, oh, again and again and again. You know, just take a little due diligence and don't be so darn click-happy. Because so many folks are. And they're getting reinfected, and then they get ticked off at me because they bring it. Well, it was just in here a little while ago, and it's infected again. Why? You know, you can't say, it's your stupidity. You can't go there.
You really need to have them sign a sheet of paper that says, I realize that the minute this machine goes out of the door, any antivirus.
I'm not responsible. Once you hook it up, you're on your own.
Right.
Where you go, I can't sit there and babysit. right. and what you click on.
That's what we really need is a hardware extension that slaps your wrist before you click
little
on this thing in a
little
arm
pops up out of the screen and smacks you.
No, yeah. Mrs. Eberwine comes out with her ruler and slaps you across the back of the knuckles.
The Mrs. Eberwine extension.
Yes, that's what I'm going to label it.
The Mrs. Eberwine. Oh, I next science fiction movie.
Oh, and I remember that so vividly. I didn't dare come home and tell my parents that I got in trouble in school. Hell yeah!
Absolutely, absolutely. I was terrorized. Excuse me, taught by nuns for many years. And if you went home and said you got smacked by the nuns, you got smacked again.
Yeah.
It really didn't matter why.
And if you didn't tell your parents you got smacked,
you got smacked twice
because they already knew.
Right. What happened today at school? Nothing. Bam. Why? That's right. I got hit by the nun. Bam. What's the second one for? Because you didn't tell me
the first one. Yeah. So you know, folks, take the time. I know sometimes you sit there and, please, take the time. It will, you know, those few extra seconds.
And our recommendations about don't install LimeWire and don't install
FairShare
and don't go to these sites and be careful what you type in a search engine. You know, misspellings are a great to get malware.
Here's the best rule of thumb. If you folks have to stop and think about it for more than 5 seconds,
don't do it.
Then don't do it. Pick up the phone. If it's a person sending you something or something else, or you're getting a notice from the bank or that, don't.
And if you don't stop and think about it, you're done.
Yeah. That's the best rule of thumb that I can offer to anybody out there.
What amazes me are the people who say, I got this notice from, I'll just say, Chase Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And I clicked on it, and the funny thing is, I don't have an account at Chase Bank. Then why did you click on it?
Exactly. Thank you. Next contestant.
Exactly.
And then their machine gets totally infected.
I told you about my call this morning. Could you give us your credit card number? If you're calling from my bank, mm-hmm. you already have my credit card.
Yeah.
We're the collection agency. They're asking you to collect on a debt and didn't give you any information about the debt you're collecting. None? Really?
No.
Really?
And like I always say, I was born at night, just not last night.
Exactly. And that's another big scam going around. Fake collection agencies calling around, scaring you into settling for a debt you don't really owe.
Here's another clue, folks. If you get a call that says, we are calling about your credit card, immediately hang up and call the 800 number on the back of your card.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number for customer service on the back of every credit card on earth. Call the number and talk to them. Get the information from the people who are calling you. Oh, what account is it? Well, we don't have that number here. Click. Mm-hmm. How much is the amount and whatever. Then you call your bank or you call that credit card
mm-hmm.
Customer service number and talk to them about it. Because I did that after I hung up from this lady. And they all went, we don't have any idea what you're talking about, sir. Thank you very much. That's
again,
fine.
You know, I mean, granted, you know, computers have become a very big part of our lives. I get that.
And virtually all banks let you log in and check your account yourself, but type the address yourself. Don't click on the link in the email.
Yeah, because here's the thing. They have gotten very good at making these emails look like the official websites. You know, they can put watermarks in there, and they can then link you to it, and they can make it look as official as the actual website.
It's just
stealing images.
I got one the other day from Sony Entertainment warning me that there's been a breach in privacy on the PlayStation Network, and I should click here to check my account. I don't have a PlayStation,
uh-huh.
but it looked really real. And there were links to the federal government fraud department that were real.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very well written.
Oh, yeah. You'd swear up and down if you were in court that, that was an official looking site. And, you know, it had all the watermarks and even the company logo. And, I can create a site like that in, you know, probably half a day. Make it look like you would think, unless you look up at the address up atop. And know where you're going. That's where I say, rule of thumb. If you have to think about it, even clicking on a website more than 5 seconds, then don't.
And most of the time, almost all of the browsers and email programs, if you point to a link and don't click on it, it will pop up and tell you what that link is. So that was one of the ways I did this. The message said it came from Sony, and when I point to the link that said, click here, it was some, looked like random text garbage.
I got one recently that said, the hour you've been dinged for, I forget, I think it was Paramount or one, I don't remember, one of the studios, for download, for DRMA,
DMCA.
One copyright, yeah. DMCA. The RAA was coming after me, the DMCA was coming after me because I had downloaded a movie illegally, and I should click here to dispute the case. Well, I happen to know for a fact that when something like that happens, you get an official-looking letter from a real lawyer.
Yeah.
Because I got one at work once. As it turns out, one of our students had borrowed one of our laptops and downloaded The Water Boy.
I thought it was Ishtar.
No, it was The Water Boy. And
insert bad movie here.
Well, yeah, but it was The Water Boy. And I will tell you right now that if I were going to steal a movie, it would not be The Water Boy. But the guy was very nice because you get a letter from the lawyer. I called the lawyer right back. Mm-hmm. Originally I thought I'd been discovered because it was a letter from Universal Studios. But it turns out that the guy... It turns out that the guy, was the lawyer. And I said, look, I don't know. I'm just the system administrator. All of the laptops in our building are registered to me. Mm-hmm. He laughed. He said, we see that a lot. He was really nice about it.
Oh, yeah.
He said, we'll follow up with you if we don't hear back from you in a week. Well, I called him back the very next day and said, here's what happened. We tracked it down. This is the actual guy. That kid is no longer in school.
Well, yeah.
He's done. That's theft and he's done.
Mm-hmm.
But... The reality is, you get a letter. You don't get an email with a link.
Mm-mm. Doesn't happen that way. It won't.
Well, like the fake FBI emails that are going around. You've been detected doing illegal things, so we're going to come and arrest you.
Good. Good to know. Thank you.
Yep. Come on down.
Yep.
Right. It's.
Well, what did I read the other day? The latest group to jump on the suing everyone bandwagon. So the RIAA and the MPAA are doing it.
Yeah.
Now the adult film industry is doing it because a lot of the movies being pirated are adult movies.
Sure.
So some of the different adult film companies, a lot of the independent. What was the one?
Well,
I just
you're in
about?
Trouble Burning, now,
yeah.
aren't you?
What was her name? Burning Angel.
I have to ask you something. Is that a password on a post-it note on your computer?
Yeah.
Is that what that is?
I didn't write it, though. Somebody gave it to me.
There's a password on a post-it note on your computer.
I believe I may have to slap you. Here,
can I watch?
Because you need a copy of that, too.
Oh, I do. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. Hang on to it, because when I bring my other one, and I'm going to need it. No, I got it. And again, my lovely sister wound up giving me a little netbook. It's one of those EEE PCs.
Oh, those are nice.
It is sweet because I bring it in for when I do my show Thursday night.
Very much
night.
Like these.
Yes, my show from Thursday nights from 6 to 9, where I do my own brand of jazz. Lock Rob out of there and turn loose in the studio. But yeah, I brought it up because I did the spreadsheet. And it's sweet because it comes, compact sized it, tote in and out versus, a big, huge laptop. And it's speed, everything else. It works great. I love it.
Yep. Excellent.
Get to the internet and all that good stuff. So really cool. Another toy.
Yep. 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 Those are very nice. I really like mine. I run Linux on mine, so it's very fast. I had one when I first got. You'll find that Windows 7 on it is okay,
mm-hmm.
but it's not a speed demon.
No, I go. It's got Windows XP, and basically all I'm using it for is a spreadsheet.
Then you should be fine.
Just putting the spreadsheet in.
I will say if you ever put Linux on it, it flies. It just flies.
No, because I do my music log. Right. And, it can figure out things. So when I'm sitting there trying to figure out tunes, and just simple surfing. If I want to check on something that, boom, I can do it. And it's sweet. I love it because it's so small.
Yep. They're tiny. They're easy to carry around. You get 4 or 5 hours of battery life out of them.
Oh, the battery life is fantastic.
Yep.
And,
certainly lasts longer than your show. So if you charge before you come here, you're in good shape no matter what happens.
Yep. Got it all charged up and just sitting there, like I said. But I'm assuming, though, once I tap into the network or the internet, it's going to start draining a little bit.
It'll drain the battery more. That's one of the things we talk about.
But I've got this other screen here.
His wife bought a Thunderbolt, an HTC Thunderbolt.
Mm-hmm.
It's a phone with Android on it.
Okay.
And it wasn't lasting a full day. So we sat down and we took off some of the junk that HTC puts on the front. We removed this gigantic freaking clock thing and just replaced it with a regular clock and took off the animation in the background and things like that. Now she gets 2 days out of the thing. You know, I mean, it's easy enough to do if you know what to tweak. Do you want all the cute stuff? Then you get about eight hours out of the battery. If you take the more of that you take off, you know, now she'll start putting some of that back. She really likes the background. She didn't care about the clock, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I said, you tweak it, you play with it until you end up with a day of battery. And then you know, because you're going to plug it in every night anyway.
Yeah.
But you get 12, 14, 18 hours out of the battery, and you should be all right then.
Well, I discovered, like on my phone, which I wasn't doing for a while there, was turning off the Bluetooth. Because when the Bluetooth is left on, it's constantly checking.
And if it's left in discovery mode, then it drains the battery completely, too.
Yeah, so I wind up, turning around and turn that off now every time I don't use the Bluetooth. And, gee, the battery's lasting a lot longer. Because I'm looking at it, wait a minute, I just charged this last night. It's the middle of the afternoon, it's down to one bar, and I have to quick... I realize, oh, I forgot to turn off the Bluetooth. So like you say, I don't have those other apps that I could have running on my phone. I stripped them all down. So it's just easier. And no more butt dialing. Got that figured out, too.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We were talking about that yesterday. You weren't there in the Second Life thing. We were talking about the fact that you butt dial me and the phone's on your waist. I have no idea how you butt dial somebody when the phone is on your waist.
Because I'm good.
You're good or bad. Somebody was saying you have a very odd butt, but that's, I suppose, neither here nor there.
Excellent muscle control.
Excellent muscle
Thank you.
Control. Thank you.
I strive for that.
Yeah, I can see that. So, yeah, that's... sorry, I was doing something else for the moment.
But no, that little netbook, though, I mean, those are really, like you said, for simple uses. I mean, granted, I'm not going to run a lot of high-powered stuff or, you know, do gaming or anything else on it, but for simple email and doing it here for the studio, it is the nuts because I just put it in my one case, a lot lighter, you know, than if I was going to try to grab, say, a big notebook and tote that in for more than I need.
Yep. Yep, that's exactly right, and there's no reason to carry around more for all you need, right?
Yep,
I mean, if you were going to be doing something high powered or you wanted to play games all day, this is not the laptop for you.
But
for what you're doing, it's perfect.
Simple needs, yeah, and works out. So yeah, I'm happy with it. And like I say, I loaded on Word and Excel. That was the only two products I need if I want to do up a quick document, which sometimes I figure I might want that, so I keep it.
Word and Excel. You're the open office guy.
Hmm?
Word and Excel, and you're the open office guy?
Mm-hmm.
But you put Word and Excel on it?
It was just easier to throw it on there for that.
Yeah.
I just haven't had the time. I literally got it about an hour or two before I was ready to come and do my show. So I happened to have that available that I quick threw that on. Yeah, I still got to strip out. I've still got to set up the email on it. Haven't done that, you know.
Strip out all the crap that comes with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like we were saying, you'll get more battery life out of that. Like I said, my friend who with the Thunderbolt barely lasted 8 hours, now it lasts 2 days.
No, well, that's why I figured.
Just get rid of some of the junk.
You know, over this coming week, I've got plenty of time to set it up a little more the way I want. Yeah, no, I run Open Office and Office, regular Microsoft Office on machines just, you know, for the hell of it. But OpenOffice, for the most part, 99% of the time, that's all I'm using. Because it's so universal. And a couple of items that I've turned around, and that's one of the features that I like about OpenOffice, I've taken a Word document and converted it to a PDF and passed it on to the person. And then that way I know it can't be altered or changed or anything else. And it's like, well, no, sorry, that's the way it was. And here's the reason, you know, our proof, when they say, well, no, I didn't. Or, no, it said this, and I can send it back to them. No.
Mm-mm. I tend to send everybody PDFs nowadays anyway, unless we're because I don't have the same quite exactly the same fonts that other people have on Word, and it screws up the metrics and it screws up the formatting. So I just send them a PDF. This is the way it's supposed to look.
Yep, and it's there, and it just does it. Yep, no, I love it.
I like the Neo Office ship logo.
Yeah, it's really very nice.
All the detail and the rigging and the lines.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 41 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1.
Now I'm listening to this song. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we have Blaine on the line from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Blaine. What's your question?
Oh, thanks, Nick. Yes, I've got an HP Pavilion slimline here, like 5310 or something. And I want to install a fairly intensive program on a master cam. And what I wanted to do before that was maximize my RAM. And I'm having a little trouble figuring out exactly how much I have installed. Well, I've got 4 gigs installed, but I think it's got 8 gig capacity. I went to like Newegg, and they had a Crucial scan, and it says I'm maxed out. But on the when I go to system information and I print it out, it seems to indicate, it says installed physical memory is 4 gigs. Total physical memory, 3.75, and it says total virtual memory is 7.5 gigs. So do I have the capacity to put in another 4 gigs? Or
well, now here's the deal.
None of those information tells you that.
What you have in terms of virtual memory, right, mm-hmm. that's also known as swap space. It's the space on your hard drive.
Uh-huh.
To which Windows sends parts of programs when you overfill memory.
Oh, okay.
As to how much memory your system can hold, you need to look in the manual or online at the HP site for the specifications on the exact model number machine you have.
Right.
That will tell you what the maximum memory is.
Oh, okay.
And that Crucial scanner may be right. That
right,
but then the other half of that question is: you say you have 4 gigs now.
Mm-hmm.
How many slots does the computer have, and how much memory is in each slot? That 4 gigs could be 2 2s.
That's what I'm thinking.
Or four ones.
Yep.
So and, when Crucial says you're maxed out, it means for the number of slots you have, they're all full.
Uh huh.
Not. And, you've got the maximum,
and you got to see what that machine will handle. Also.
Right,
right.
And then the third hand. How many hands are we up to now?
So,
what operating system are you running?
Oh, Windows 7.
Windows 7, 32-bit or 64-bit?
64.
Okay,
then you can add.
Right, you must have 64-bit to put more than 4 gigs of RAM in.
Okay, yeah, I do, but I'm still.
Right.
So well, you may gotta end
check
up doing.
You got to check the hardware manual to see how many slots you have and what the maximum RAM capacity is. And you may have to take memory out. So if you have 2 2s in it now,
oh, sure,
you may have to take those 2 2s
I've
out.
I've said it before in a Mac, yeah. I've done that. But I'm almost thinking, well, according to the website and the manual, I think I've got only got 2 slots, and I've got 2 2 times 2 in there now.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so what you need to do is figure out what is the maximum capacity RAM card you can put in each slot.
Right.
And then buy those and throw away the 2 2s.
Right. I'm thinking I want to do, you know, like 2x4, you know, 2 4 gig.
Mm-hmm. Well, figure out if you can do that.
Right.
And then go ahead and do it.
Right. Now, and that would be, in other words, this thing that I printed out from my computer, it says system information. It's a little misleading because, like you say, that's swap space.
Right. That just ignore that. Right. That has nothing to do with what you're trying to do.
The physical RAM line is the one that you actually have.
Right.
What's interesting is the one that's at 3.75 RAM. That makes me think you've got a quarter gig of RAM shared with your video card.
Or you've only got 32 bit Windows.
He thought he had 64.
Should be 64. I think I saw it in here somewhere.
Yeah.
It says so in the manual or something.
You probably, well, it's HP, so you probably have shared video. So whatever amount of memory you get, some of it will be taken up by video RAM.
Right, right. So is it something where I should take it apart and physically look to see what's in there?
Well, or that will certainly tell you how many slots you have.
Right.
You still need the manual to tell you what's the maximum capacity of each slot.
Okay, so that would be the Bible, then, would be the manual.
If you don't have the manual anymore, check again on HP's website for the specifications. Make sure you put in your exact model number. You know, a model number that's one off or whatever, or a letter difference, is not at all the same motherboard.
Yeah, I know. There's like a million different models of the same computer.
Yeah, yep. That's the problem.
Yeah, and so I would pay more attention to the manual and the HP website.
Yep.
As far as, so I really don't have to take this apart to observe, as long as they say, well, you only got two slots and it's only got the capacity.
You can easily pull the cover off the side and just see a quick visual.
Yeah, it doesn't
to
hurt
see
to
if
do
there's,
it.
There's any slots available.
Right, right.
But it really, that is only going to tell you if you have any free slots. It will also tell you how many slots you have.
Right.
You still have to look in the manual or online to say what's the maximum capacity I can put in each slot.
Okay, so, if they say, I think it did seem to indicate that I think I'm maxed out right now.
Well, but again, that may simply be saying you're maxed out in terms of the number of chips filling the number of slots.
Take a look and see.
Which is different from the number of the density of the chips. You know,
right.
So you really need to look in the manual.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Okay, fabulous. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yep. Sure.
Have
good luck,
one.
Blaine.
It is easy. It's just to pop the cover off.
Well, because but again, you'll won't find give you all the information.
Right. But oftentimes you find conflicting information. You go to a RAM vendor and they say, oh, yeah, you can use 8-gig SIMs, and you buy them and they don't work.
Well, it's because that's why you don't believe them. You call and you look on the HP website. Trust, but verify.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Bodan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan. What's your question?
Gentlemen, I just bought myself a new point-and-shoot camera, a Panasonic Lumix, and I've got a question for the generic tourist weekend photographer. The difference between the classes of memory chips or cards you can buy, like SD cards, some are rated with a circle 2, some go up to 4, and the other ones actually seems to go to 10, which would be considered the Ultra or like the Pro Line series. My question from your experience is maybe what you guys use in your cameras, may it be an SLR or just a point-and-shoot, is there a big difference between a Class 2 and a Class 4 memory card?
It's the speed that the data can be written, and you have to match that with what the camera can do. So if the camera can only do 1x, then it doesn't matter if you get a 10x card. And the biggest issue that comes into with the speed of writing data is, can the camera do, say, a burst mode? Can it take 10 frames in a second? And it needs a fast memory card to write the data that fast.
So I should look at the specs of the camera.
Right. So you can always get a slower one, which would be cheaper, but if you want the speed of writing multiple successive pictures in a row, then the faster card may be advantageous for you.
But on the other hand, if you're just the what I consider myself the generic tourist camera photographer, do I really need one that's rated with a 10?
Right, probably not.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of times it's well, even with tourist cameras, it's the action shot. You're taking pictures of your kid's soccer game. You know, if you can take a burst, 10, 15 shots in a row, you get one really good one out of that.
Right.
Okay.
But again, at maximum, you need to know what the max is your camera will take, because you don't want to buy one beyond that.
And Nick, what's the terminology, how I determine that when I open up the owner's manual?
It should say, you know, you have a, it'll take SD cards, and somewhere in there it'll say, you know, SD2, SD4, whatever it is.
Okay.
Or something like that.
Maybe it says speed. I mean, it
well,
depends.
Wait a minute. But on the other hand, if I insert a 10 in my car, if the camera only can, you know, process less than that, it's waste then, according, you know.
Right.
Exactly.
So you don't want to buy any faster than your camera supports, because then you're wasting money. So you have to look at the camera specifications and see what speed the camera actually supports.
Understand now.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Any other social events coming up for the Jazz family? Like we had that pancake breakfast back in March. We had the wine and cheese thing at Charlotte last September. Anything coming up like that?
Art Loves Jazz on May 19th.
I'm sorry, say again, please.
Art Loves Jazz, May 19th at the Artisan Works.
That's not us. That's the whole family, the whole Jazz 90.1 family.
Yep.
Right.
All righty, I'll look into that.
All right.
Thank you.
Keep listening to the station, and you will be the first to know. That's how this works. All right. It's getting to the point where you have to know 100 million little tiny esoteric pieces of information to get the most out of your systems anymore. And that's understandable, but it's frustrating. All right. We're done for another week. We want to thank each and every one of you who called in. I want to apologize to those of you who did not get on the air, even though you did call in. I'm afraid you'll have to call earlier next week. It's Chicago-style calling. Call early, call often. As Don did, he called... he only called twice. And that's fine. We don't have a problem with that. But we'll be back next week, right here at noon, just as we are every week. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. George is coming in next to play some of the greatest German music you will ever hear. Linda's here to make sure that he sticks to the straight and narrow. I'm going to leave my cane with her so she can just beat him if she has to. And we'll be back next week on the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.